accession number 20474, reel 3.
Reel 3.
I should tell you that the Gorilla Platoon have been supplied with bicycles, one per man. They were very heavy BSA machines of 1914-18 vintage, and probably been in ordnance stores ever since. Hardly the right form of transport in tropical climate. The idea was that the Japanese used bicycles quite freely, but their bicycles, we found later, weighed about a third of our English bicycles. So we started off this exercise. We were supposed to have landed at Hambantota and advancing inland to towards Ratnapura in the centre of the island, through jungle country. It was an animal reserve. Once you left the bare, sandy hinterland around the southeast coast, very thick jungle and wild life there. I seen a bear there, a brown bear, and my friend Terry Murray would tell you they were almost attacked one night by wild elephants, a herd of wild elephants, and he got all his men out and crashed in their mess tins to frighten them off. And there was leopard there as well. Well, we started off up the road. I was the advance guard of the 1st Battalion, Northamptonshire Regiment, advancing towards the interior of Ceylon. And, of course, it was all preordained. We were ambushed. I think it was by the Devons, and who were on the other side to us. Well, they were on the British side. We were the Japanese. And I was, by the umpires, I was declared to be wounded. And I was evacuated in a field ambulance via Ratnapura to Colombo, into a naval hospital, staffed by the equivalent of the QAs in the Royal Naval, Women's Royal Naval, Royal Naval Nursing Service, I think, or something it's called. Very nice girls. And there was me in an officer's ward, the only occupant of this marvellous ward, waited on hand and foot by these girls, and crisp white sheets to sleep between, all mod con. I was the only officer casualty that got evacuated that way. It was all part of the exercise, you see, to test the exercise that the casualties and the evacuation of casualties and medical treatment. I don't know what happened to the rest of my men. I was whisked off in this ambulance. And I never saw them again for a few weeks, or 2 or 3 weeks. So I found myself in this hospital in Colombo. It was all very nice. I got a board stiff. Nothing to do in the evening. I got rather friendly with one of the girls, one of the nurses, and I said, you fancy skipping out one evening? We can go and have a meal. And there's a film, I believe, on in Colombo. You could get a taxi, I'm sure, round about, take us there and bring us back. Which we did. It was all very pleasant. I think we went to a Chinese restaurant, if I remember rightly. Even in those days, there were Chinese restaurants in Colombo. I mean, it was European Chinese cooking. I think their main menu was pork chops. And eventually I got my marching orders. And told to return to my unit. and where I met up with three or four Dutch officers who had managed to escape from Sumatra or Java, who were accommodated in this hospital to recuperate from their wretched journey across the Indian Ocean to Colombo. They were quite a jolly crowd. And they had been rubber or tea planters in Java or Sumatra. So I got back to my unit. I think we were still at Hambantota. And then we were then sent to a place called Katakarunda, which is just outside Colombo, a few miles south of Colombo. Very nice station, one of the best we ever found. It was an RAF aerodrome. We were basically defence of the airfield. Exercises, of course, and I got my carriers back. And then we got our marching orders to return to India. I lost my carriers again. They were kept behind in Ceylon, and I had to return to a rifle company, which was then commanded by Peter Kiley, who lives at Hurstmonceux still. Well, he did. I think he's still alive. And we occasionally get in touch with each other. And we finished up at Ranchi, which I'd already been to the previous year. Companies from Dinapur went up to Ranchi for a week's company training. And I was in B Company. We did company training up there. I think it was about November 1941. So I knew Ranchi. Of course, it was entirely different when I got there, back there. It was like the Aldershot of India. All units going up to Burma seemed to go through Ranchi. And after about a month's training there, we had orders to proceed to Burma. By which time, I was put in command of the carrier platoons of the Gurkhas and the Punjabis in our brigade. I was a brigade carrier officer, based at brigade headquarters. Which certainly was not a bad life. My knowledge of Urdu was somewhat primitive. My knowledge of Gurkhali was non-existent. But as most commands in the Indian Army were in English, like halt or fire, it wasn't too easy. But a rank in the Indian Army called a VCO, Viceroy's Commissioned Officer, who were written for the ranks. And they were pretty articulate in English. At least you could communicate with them, although they might have been Gurkhas or Punjabis. In the Punjabis, of course, they had three different races. They had the Sikhs, Punjabi Muslims, the Dogras, and forget the fourth crowd, but they all blended well. So in my platoon, I had three sections of Punjabis. One was Sikhs, one were Punjabi Muslims, and the other were Dogras. So, you know, each section was led by a Jemadar, Viceroy's Commissioned Officer. Well, we entrained our carriers. And in my recollection, there were 43 we put on a train. And that's quite some job. Each carrier platoon consisted of three sections of four carriers, 12, plus one for the platoon commander, and one for the CO. Eventually we found that it got another one issued with us for the brigade commander. The brigade commander was rather a bulky man and said, I had no intention of getting into that carrier. And our CO never did. He didn't like the idea of it very much. But we used them as reserves in case of breakdowns, which is quite useful to have as a backstop in case of breakdowns, mechanical breakdowns. Well, the Northampton platoon was put in charge of all these carriers. The Punjabis and the Gurkhas went back to their units and entrained separately. So I was put in command of this train. I was OC train with all these flats. They're called flats. Flat wagons, no tops, no sides. And you drove off a ramp and drove the carrier right to the front. And you kept it secure with hawsers and ropes, made it secure, with the brake on, of course. Petrol turned off. And I was at the back of the train in a little kind of compartment. I had my own cabin, and I was next door to the guard, who was had a little cubby hole behind me. So I didn't suffer. The men slept on their vehicles. And we travelled down to Calcutta. And we finished up in a siding outside Calcutta for 2 or 3 days. And then we set off in this enormous crocodile of carriers, chunted off through Bengal. Eventually we got to a town called Guwahati. No, I beg your pardon, that's wrong.
Chittagong?
No, we're going north. Sili. Well, the situation is that at this town in Bengal, the broad gauge from Calcutta ends, and the narrow gauge, which goes to Assam, right up to the northeast part of India, starts. So we had to unload all our carriers and reload onto another train, the other side of the siding, which was the narrow gauge railway. Well, this took all night. It's quite a tedious operation, unloading 43 carriers, driving them across the other side, driving them onto the flats onto this other train, and anchoring them down. And they have to be well and truly anchored. It took all night. So the following day, we took off. We got the clearance to leave. So there we went. Eventually, we came to the Brahmaputra River, which is a very big, wide river. It flows down from the Himalayas, down into Bengal, through Bengal. And it was quite a job. And most of the land-borne forces had to negotiate this obstacle. There's no bridge. So again, we had to unload our carriers, put them onto a ferry, which went across, backwards and forwards, and then reload onto another train on the east side of the Brahmaputra. Oh, a thunderstorm. Which again took about a couple of days to get all sorted out, you can imagine. Well, eventually we got to this other train, the other side of the river, on the east side of the Brahmaputra, on the Assam-Burma side. So we set off. And eventually we arrived at a railhead for the 14th Army on that front, a place called Dimapur. And we unloaded. It was a very busy place. A lot of units there, mostly workshops and stores, ammunition dumps, food supplies, and whatever. There was even a naffy, I think, there. And we were told by the area commander to park ourselves in the jungle, two or three miles outside Dimapur, and lie low until we were wanted. Well, by which time the Gurkhas and the Punjabis rejoined me. And, well, there was nothing much to do. We couldn't do any firing, obviously. We hadn't got all that amount of ammunition in any case. So we did some rather gentle maintenance on the vehicles. And it was Christmas. And this was Christmas...
42.
43 now, aren't we? Yes. 43. Yeah. Christmas 43. And the regiment had preceded us and gone up the road from Dimapur with the rest of the brigade via Kohima to the Kabul Valley. And they had orders to reach the Chinwin. But my carriers had to wait for transport to take us up to the road through Kohima to the Kabul Valley. It was Christmas Day, 1943, and the Gurkhas, ever resourceful, went out and shot some deer, jungle deer the day before, and cooked it over open fires, smoked it, and they gave it to all the British troops as a Christmas present. It was lovely. I've never tasted anything like it. Smoked venison, if you like to call it. A bit of a change from bully beef and biscuits. And we managed to get a few bottles of beer from the Naffy. So we had that was our Christmas dinner. And it was most acceptable. Shortly after Christmas Day, day or two, we had our orders and we had to load all our carriers onto trucks. Had ramps up there to the from the ground up into the back of the truck, empty trucks, open-sided, just like on the rail. Well, we started off. Aye, well, that was a road. There was a sheer drop, what they used to call the cad, on one side. It hadn't been a road, really. It had only been a kind of goat track or the most a mule track before. And thousands of tea plantation coolies and things had been commandeered and mobilized by the army to dig out a road from Dimapur through Kohima to the Kabul Valley. And this labor force was commanded by ex-Assam tea planters, of which one of our company commanders had been one before the war, and he'd left us to... be in command of one of these corps of coolies to dig out the road, the hillside, to make way for a road. It was only basically a one-way system. There were various kind of pieces on the side where you can pass, like a lay-by. Well, we eventually got to the Kabul Valley, Murray. I had my orders from brigade headquarters. Put your brigades, put your carriers into harbour and leave a skeleton crew behind for maintenance, all ready for action if required. You will send your crews, and you also will return to your units. So the Gurkhas and the Punjabis went back to their battalions, and I took my platoon from the Northamptons, and after a march of a good, day and a half, we found the battalion very near the Chinwin. And orders came for the attack on a strong Japanese position at a place called Chokchor, which dominated the River Yu and its confluence with the River Chinwin. And the men were sent into various rifle companies, and I joined my old rifle company, which I'd been in some time before.
Which company was that?
Number 4. We lost our identity. We used to be ABCD. We renumbered them, renamed them, renumbered them on the CO's orders. And when we got there, we had one too many officers. There was a company commander, second in command, and there were 4 subalterns. One too many. And my old platoon was being commanded by my friend Stanley Hinks, who I'd taken over as guerrilla platoon commander. At the time of that Hamban Tota exercise, he was away. I don't know whether it was sickness or on a course or what, but he wasn't there, and I took over from him. And we were great pals. He was a solicitor in Leicester. He died 2 or 3 years ago. So Sandy and I were left. One of us had to stay behind for the attack on this short chore. So we thought, the only thing to do was a toss for it. He lost. I won. And we had a system there called LOBs, left out of battles. And every company had to keep back an officer, 1 or 2 NCOs and a few men to reinforce the company they came from in the event of casualties. So we didn't go into the attack. We stayed behind in reserve, rear battalion headquarters. Poor old Stanley got wounded the first day and was left out all night. They couldn't get his body in. And they got him in the next day. Needless to say, the attack didn't succeed. There was strong barbed wire emplacement there all the way around. But they got Stanley back again, and the following day. And he survived it all, but he had a wound in his top right hand here, in his right shoulder, which prevented him from writing for the rest of his life. He couldn't use a pen, which was a bit difficult, as he was articled to his father in Leicester, his father's solicitor's firm. And he took his Law Society exams writing with his left hand, which he taught himself. And he was discharged and maledied out of the army as soon as he was repatriated. He didn't serve any longer in the army. So I rejoined my company and took over command of the platoon and did a fair bit of patrolling. And one day on a patrol, I was out with the platoon to patrol in this emplacement, and came to the conclusion the Japs had fled in the night and evacuated it. So I struggled ahead and cut the wire with wire cutters and ordered my men to rush in. And we came in there and found the bunkers were empty and the enemy had gone. On our left was a platoon from another Company, commanded by John Hopkins, who's still alive. He's another one I could give you a name and address of. And he went into the church after the war. He's now retired from being a clergyman. He lives near Swindon. And there were two main features in this big establishment. Two big bunkers. And the CO called the left-hand one Hoppy, after Hoppy. The right-hand one Noki, after me. And that name stuck. Well, we occupied the Japanese position without opposition. And we then went on patrols further towards the Chinmen. And we had a brush with the enemy on patrol. Nothing very much there. The Punjabi is on our right had walked into an ambush and had one or two casualties, and they came through us and we looked after them. We set up an ambush, but the Japs didn't take it any further, and we withdrew. And eventually, we were told to withdraw from Chalk Chor and retire on the Kabul Valley, where the 32 Brigade were concentrating. A place called Tamu. It had a post office, a telegraph line and everything. Well, it was only a small place. Mud Hut, really, was the post office. And so we marched back there, and when we got there, I was told to mobilise the tank carriers, which I proceeded to get my men out of their rifle companies and from the Gurkhas and the Punjabis, and we got our carriers going. They'd been maintained, all ready to go, and we were detailed to back to brigade headquarters, act as security and safeguard and guard the perimeter of brigade headquarters. And we did our patrolling in the Kabul Valley, which has got a terrible reputation for disease. It's for the typhus is very bad there, malaria, dysentery, you name it. Typhus was the chief killer in the Kabul Valley. We all, of course, inoculated against it. Later on, when the Japanese withdrew through the Kabul Valley, they lost hundreds of men through death, sickness, typhus, malaria. They had no modern medicines. So I went on patrol with my chaps, and we patrolled the Kabul Valley. And one day the Brigadier said, I want you to go down to 100 Brigade headquarters. That's the 2nd Borders and a Gurkha battalion, I think, was the 4th, 10th. And and a Frontier Force regiment, I think, was also. Said, I want you to go down there, report to Brigadier James, who's the brigade commander. He feels a bit naked and unprotected on his left flank. I'd like you to scout round and see if he's, protected there, you see. So I went down there. I got to brigade headquarters, down the one and only dirt track leading down the road. And I found brigade headquarters, and I was introduced to the brigadier, and the brigadier was sitting in an armchair in his command post as such, with a very nice bar that he'd had the Gurkhas build, and maps on the wall. A real old Indian Army cat, he was. And he said, Noakes, now look here. First of all, we start, would you pour me out a gin and French? And pour one for yourself, will you, while you're about it? A decent sized one, you see. So, which I did. I haven't put that in my report, actually, but my article. And I was told to, I refused to put it in. But, So he said, look here, this is the Kabul Valley, and the Japs are advancing up the valley, and I've got the Frontier Force rifles here, the borders are blocking the Kabul Valley, they've had a few casualties, and they seem to be withdrawing. He said, I want you to patrol down the left flank here into the jungle, and make sure they're not...